Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. With Charlotte's growth, the local construction industry must be in great shape, right? Well, not necessarily. That industry is navigating a complicated landscape. They've been facing worker shortages and financial pressures, including rising costs. There was already a shortage of skilled workers, but immigration enforcement put more pressure on finding skilled and unskilled workers. Costs for imported steel, aluminum, and lumber have been rising. Now, increased fuel costs are having an impact. And to top it off, last year, construction of new apartments hit a five-year low, even as construction on retail, office, and restaurant space hit its lowest mark in a decade. Today, we check in on how the construction industry is weathering this storm and what it might mean for our future growth. Tony Macia has been covering this as the founder and executive editor of the Charlotte Ledger. He is here, along with Dave Simpson, president and CEO of Carolina's AGC, which stands for Associate General Contractors. And Dr. Lingguang Song is the founding director of the newly announced Albert School of Construction at UNC Charlotte. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here. Welcome. Morning. Tony, I'm going to start with you because there are so many intersecting factors that are having an impact right now on the construction industry, many of which I named. It's hard to know where to start, but let's start with an analysis of what the state of construction is today. From your reporting, Tony, how would you characterize what's happening in this region right now?
Well, that's a very broad question, and I'm sure we'll dig down into it. But there are a lot of moving parts, like you said. On the one hand, you know, Charlotte is a region that has grown for decades, and so that's something that's really good for the construction industry. And you need people in construction, building the houses, building the offices where people work, the places that they go and shop and eat and everything else. At the same time, you know, Charlotte has seen a little bit of a slowdown in terms of some of the starts of some of this construction. You know, we built a lot of apartments in 2023, 2024. That has slowed a little bit. Office construction has slowed a little bit. Now, you know, this is a cyclical industry, and in many ways, and if one portion is kind of hot, another one's kind of cold, that can flip very quickly. You have right now a phenomenon where a lot of people are staying in their houses for a variety of reasons. They're adding on to their houses. They need construction workers to be able to do that. And as you said, Mike, there are some challenges. I mean, you do have higher costs on some raw materials. Not these things don't rise across the board. You know, these are commodities that can rise and fall. You know, you do have these tariff pressures. You do have these employment challenges that frankly have been there for many years. And so it's there's a lot going on, but I'd say overall the outlook for construction in this area is strong, but it's maybe it's a little bit challenging right now.
So Dave Simpson, you're in Raleigh this morning. You deal with the construction people all over the state. Is this a Charlotte phenomenon, these challenges that we've been talking about so far this morning, or is this statewide? Is it nationwide?
I would say we are very fortunate and blessed to be in the Carolinas with commercial construction because everybody wants to live here and raise a family and work. And I get interview questions from reporters all over the country, and sometimes they don't believe what I'm saying because we're, despite all the many complexities and challenges that we have, we're in a really wonderful situation. The future looks bright. AGC of America recently did a survey of the contractors, and North Carolina and South Carolina contractors were very optimistic. The complexities that you talked about, Mike, they're nothing new. I mean, there were complexities with COVID. There are complexities when we basically have really serious economic problems. What's going on right now globally is causing all kinds of interesting dynamics. But overall, the commercial construction industry, I would say, is in good shape. We're very interested to see what happens in the legislatures in both states, and I'll talk about that a little bit more.
Dr. Song, I'm perhaps this storm that we're going through right now, these little rain showers that the construction industry is experiencing, should not overshadow the fact that everybody wants to live here, as Dave said, and that brings with it the need for all this. And I guess that's why UNC Charlotte found the need to start the school that you're operating, the Albert School of Construction. Is that why? Is the demand so high here that we need to be able to train quickly a whole slew of workers?
Absolutely. Just to tag back on Tony and Dave's comments, from our perspective, we don't build projects, but we build people, right? The talent that enter into the industry. From my education perspective, I think there is a good news I want to share. One is internship. Our students need to do this mandatory internship. In the last 3 years, we've been mandatory the internship. Nobody complained that they cannot graduate without, you know, finding an internship job, right? Another good news is almost, I think in the last 3 years, pretty much close to 100% job placement several months before graduation. So we're celebrating that almost 100%, but at the same time, I realized that's also indicate there is a market needs, because employer come back to say that, hey, why there is graduating class, there's nobody left for us. So I feel that that's pretty creating this market-driven environment that we need to grow. Currently, we have about 400 students, but apparently we need to have more. We need to attract more students coming to this industry. Of course, not just the higher education, but also the pipeline, starting from trade and community college and vocational school.
And that's partly because, as we've talked out, people want to live here. But evidently, Tony, Charlotte is one of the fastest growing construction markets in the country, with $2 to $2.4 billion in new development planned in just the Center City by 2027. I'm just curious, because we've talked a lot about Center City challenges, particularly with office space going vacant, et cetera. What's on the drawing board for Uptown?
Well, there are a number of projects. You know, those are numbers from Charlotte Center City Partners, and they basically take anything that's been announced or envisioned, I think, and put those in. So it always sort of remains to be seen what is actually going to be built. But, you have a number of big projects, if you're asking specifically about the Center City. You have the that have been envisioned but haven't been realized yet. I'm sure you've talked a lot on this program, I'm guessing, about, Brooklyn Village. You have another one, Center South on South Boulevard. There's a whole, the old Price's Chicken Coop project. I mean, there are a whole bunch of projects that are envisioned or that have been announced, but that haven't broken ground yet. And a lot of that is that developers are saying that the costs just don't really work out at this moment in time, where the demand maybe is there, but at the cost that they have and all the various inputs of, land and construction costs and higher interest rates, that it's not as gangbusters. We're not growing like gangbusters like we did a few years ago, but there's still a lot on the drawing board, which is something that's pretty positive.
In the 90s, there was this surge of demand for single family home residential neighborhoods and the construction that ensued because of that demand. Is that continuing?
Well, there have been some shifts. Single family homes and big, housing developments with 400, 500 single family homes, there's the land in Mecklenburg County isn't there. And so you're seeing a lot of those move out into surrounding counties if they can find land. So, you have this trend in Mecklenburg of getting more dense. You have more townhome construction, condos, obviously apartments. Everybody loves to talk about all the apartment buildings popping up all over the place. It's shifting, and a lot of this affects the construction industry. It's the type of things that are being built is shifting a little bit from where we were a few decades ago.
And this push of residential construction out into counties that surround Mecklenburg is causing its own set of challenges. In Lancaster County, you report in the Ledger that the demand for construction of single family neighborhoods was so great, they had to put a moratorium on that construction until they could reshape their development policies. And that's not the only outlying community that has put a moratorium on these things. Where else is that happening, and how is that figuring in on any kind of slowdown in construction?
Yeah, a lot of communities, I think, in our region are looking at the challenges of growth, that a lot of people like growth and more people moving here, and that's great, but there's some concern in some communities that do we have the infrastructure to be able to support it? Do we have the roads? Do we have the water and sewer? Do we have the schools? And so you're seeing some communities taking a hard look at that. I think of, you know, Mooresville. I think there's some examples down in Union County, which is, you know, at one point was one of the fastest growing counties in the country, where people are saying, hey, wait, we might want to tap the brakes on this a little bit and understand, you know, do we have the infrastructure to support all of the new housing that we're building?
So, Dave, according to ABC Carolinas, that's the Associated Builders and Contractors, which I don't believe is your organization. I think it's another organization. The backlogs for construction projects right now are at historically high levels. So the problem on the one hand is not one of finding work, but the ability to get that work done, evidently. Why the backlog?
One of the problems is, that's a very good question, Mike. The labor shortage, the workforce shortage, is probably the biggest challenge that we have in the construction industry in the Carolinas and nationwide. As far as the backlog goes, I think particularly with private markets, some folks are waiting for the Fed to reduce the rate. But I will say that the overall outlook, particularly for things like hospital construction, data centers, public buildings, are all pretty strong. One thing that hadn't that was mentioned before by Tony that needs to be talked about real quickly is the infrastructure needs. The infrastructure needs in North and South Carolina are absolutely phenomenal. The legislature here in Raleigh began its so-called short session yesterday, and we were talking to them about the incredible need for infrastructure funding for highways, buildings, utility work. And we were disappointed, like a lot of business, that last year the North Carolina legislature did not approve a budget. They have like a continuation budget. We're hopeful that they're going to cut a budget deal quicker than some people think, and that they look at all the infrastructure needs. In South Carolina, I know we're talking about Charlotte mostly, but a lot of folks live in South Carolina, your market there too. Governor Henry McMaster proposed $1.2 billion for infrastructure funding. And it looks like right now the legislature in Columbia will probably approve about $500 million for roads, highways, and bridges.
You deal with legislatures in both the Carolinas. Both of those legislatures are controlled by Republicans. And the state of South Carolina, of course, has a Republican governor, where we have a Democrat. But how would you compare their attitude toward their approach to these requests for increasing infrastructure for growth and development, these two different legislatures? How would you compare it?
That's a nice loaded question. I like that. I used to be a newspaper reporter. I got to tread lightly on that. But I would say that the lawmakers in both states are very business-minded. They understand the needs there. And I think one of the things, as an example, on the roads, particularly in South Carolina, there are a lot of potholes. And I think that the lawmakers realize that they need to do more, and we're working on trying to help with that.
Okay, because we keep being told that growth is good and it's going to increase the tax base, and with that comes the need for services, which requires taxes. So I'm not sure how you balance that equation, but we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the shortage of workers that the industry is facing and what they plan to do about that, and what the role of UNC Charlotte and their new Albert School of Construction may be in easing that a little bit, and some other things that are facing the construction industry as we go through this hour with Tony Messier from the Charlotte Ledger, Dave Simpson from Carolina's AGC, and Dr. Lingguang Song from UNC Charlotte. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about construction, the construction industry in the Carolinas, and the challenges it is facing from various different forces. Tony Messier is here. He's been reporting on it extensively in the Charlotte Ledger. He's the founder and executive editor of that publication. Dave Simpson is the president and CEO of Carolina's AGC. They are General Contractors Association. And Dr. Lingguang Song is with us, founding director of the Albert School of Construction. Construction at UNC Charlotte. One of the challenges that I mentioned, Dave, is finding workers, both skilled and unskilled. How much of that challenge is being driven now by immigration enforcement? I mean, a lot of the construction workers may have been undocumented. So did the crackdown by ICE, which is ongoing, result in a measurable loss of available workers?
In late last year, and mostly in Charlotte and in Raleigh and in some areas like Winston-Salem, there were so-called ICE raids. And that caused a lot of consternation within the construction industry. Hundreds of people did not come to work for several weeks. Their children did not go to a lot of the schools. And it was very challenging for the construction industry at a time when we already have a very significant labor shortage. And the market was really hit hard by this. I've talked to a lot of folks about that. And from everything I can piece together right now in North Carolina, we're pretty much back to where we are. But where we are with the baseline, like a lot of businesses, is not great. There are a lot of jobs out there. You're right, Mike, about the backlog. There's a backlog of work to be done that will come. But right now, it's really tough getting enough people in the construction industry. The jobs are there, but it's hard getting the people, just like it is for the hospitality industry, restaurants, whatever, you name it.
In the conservative publication Carolina Journal, which is published by the John Locke Foundation, David Larson, who's been a guest on this program, writes that by electoral and market choices, quote, Americans are signaling that we want three things done at the same time: jobs in comfortable offices, products made in America, and an end to large-scale immigration. And in reality, he says, until the robots arrive, we probably have to pick two of those. In fact, he says, the brute fact is we need immigrants to do these jobs. Is that something, Dave, you deal with legislatures, is that something that policymakers understand? And most of this is coming from the federal level, so maybe you can answer that question, but is it something they understand?
First of all, the robots ain't here yet. And we deal a lot with not only legislators here in North and South Carolina, but also in Washington as well. Senator Tom Tillis, for example, he has been probably one of the staunchest proponents of helping with the immigration situation from a workforce standpoint. I hear our contractors in both Carolinas all the time basically saying, the work is there, we need more people. We need to get some legislation through Washington where it would allow for guest workers and workers who are here to like they do to a better extent in agriculture, be able to stay here. A significant number of our workforce involve folks outside the United States. And when you look at all that and you look at some of the mega projects that are being done in both Carolinas, and you look at the workforce challenges by having these big projects built and sucking some of the local labor force from that, it's all very challenging.
And Mike, if you look at the numbers, I think somewhere between a quarter and a third of construction employees in North Carolina are immigrants. And I know that anecdotally, when you had those border patrol, the stepped up border patrol enforcement back in November in Charlotte, I think we reported in the Charlotte Ledger that you there were some work sites that just shut down for a few days because there were a significant number of employees not coming to work, or subcontractors or what have you, just not showing up. And so that creates delays add to costs. And then if you need to pay more to get workers, that obviously increases costs. So, there are definitely ramifications of that.
Dr. Song, you may be in academia now, but you were in the construction business for a good part of your professional life in various, working for various companies. the construction industry, it seems to me, is an important, valuable, dynamic industry that politicians would recognize as being more than just necessary. It's vital to the economy. Why is the industry having this misunderstanding about immigration and the need for workers?
Well, first of all, I think construction, you're right. The other day I was looking at the data, we're 5% of the state GDP. So there is a good reason why we want to focus on construction. But link back, I think I'm not expertise in this, you know, immigration topics, but we're in the market where we can attract as many talent as possible into construction business. I think the short labor shortage, the larger problem is the image of construction profession, right? Because, you know, students and their parents not thinking about construction as a viable career. You know, that's why we keep thinking about undocumented workers or, you know, immigrants. The same time, what we really want to do from an education perspective is try to educate the public. The construction industry offers so many career pathways and they offer excellent upward mobility. It all the way coming, start from workers all the way to project managers and even larger roles, managing the whole supply chain. That's why from my perspective, I really want to work with the industry, being part of the solution, help to build the talent pipeline and attract more Americans to join this industry, not just traditional students, but community college, adult learners, or even veterans.
Part of the loss of workers is also due to something else that happens in every industry, retirements. People are leaving because they're reaching retirement age. And according to the Associated Builders and Contractors, the industry across the country will need 349,000 new workers this year and an additional 456,000 workers next year just to keep the supply and demand in balance. Tony, from what you know, is that possible?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really hard, but it goes back to what Dr. Song was saying about it's the image. You know, I've been covering growth and development in Charlotte for more than 20 years, and one of the things you always hear from people in this industry is that we need to change the perception of this industry. And you have a lot of parents who encourage their children to go to college, get a 4-year degree so they can get an office job, and you know, and the response from the industry has always sort of been, well, that's great, but it's not for everybody. And some people, if you like working with your hands, if you like working outdoors, these can be really good jobs. And so part of it is turning that perception around a little bit. And there are some signs, I think, that that's starting to happen, which is encouraging.
I mean, there's obviously office jobs in the construction industry, but I guess the serious demand for workers is in the people who work outdoors and actually build these structures. With the exodus of so many people retiring and the need for so many people to replace them, Dave, did they not see this coming?
First of all, bad pun, but what Dr. Song said before is music to my ears. They saw it coming. The construction industry is such a wonderful place to get young, promising people in and make nice careers out of them. We at Carolinas ADC are doing everything that we can to help train the workforce. You're exactly right, Mike, about the exodus. It's also happening in other areas like North Carolina Department of Transportation. They're having the same kind of exodus. But we got a $5.5 million grant from the North Carolina legislature several years ago, and we have trained through the community colleges and what we call these construction boot camps over 400 people who have graduated from that. We're pushing 200 people from our Construction Business Academy who are graduating there. We're doing everything we can to, as Tony said, get people into a very promising industry. And you don't have to go to a 4-year college and get a degree in history or philosophy. You can go to the community college. You can go to what Dr. Song is talking about, UNCC, and you can have a wonderful career. And it's office jobs. It's jobs outside that are very excellent ways to work.
And it seems, Dr. Song, if you were a kid in high school or in early years of college and you're looking for how to spend the rest of your life, there's a lot of opportunity here. You know, almost 1 million people are needed in this industry in the next 2 years. So how does the Albert School of Construction figure into the filling the needs of that pipeline?
That's right. I think we're looking at North Carolina. I think around the country, we're number four in terms of construction manager and the civil engineer job. If you're adding them together, the country needs almost 1 million just in engineering and construction. And North Carolina ranked number four. Charlotte, of course, number one in job market for everybody. So I think there is definitely the need is here. And we want to attract all people to come to this industry, not just the one that want to become a construction manager, but we want to work with, again, the K-12 community college vocational school together so that we can show them the great potential here in this industry. And
it should be pointed out, this is not the first time you've been involved in something like this. You were in Houston, at a school in Houston doing something yes. similar to this. You weren't running it, but now you're running it. But this new school includes planning and design and engineering, long-term operations, et cetera. How is what you offer now different from the engineering department and the electrical engineering department and the architecture department at UNC Charlotte and what they've been providing all these years?
Sure. I think we work together, of course. Most of our program is in the interdisciplinary area of study. We want to connect everybody together instead of working in silos. We want to take a new approach and train your student to be managing the interface between different disciplines, especially that's what project manager or construction manager jobs to managing the interfaces. So that's one of the focus we want to focus on is the project life cycle, either from planning, design, construction, all the way to operation and facility management, so that our students see the big picture.
So these numbers, Dave, that I mentioned a moment ago, almost 1 million workers needed in the next 2 years, they sound enormous. Are they, or do they reflect something akin to what's normal turnover in your industry?
They are astronomical, but as an example, North Carolina added 10,200 construction jobs last year over the previous year, ranking North Carolina among the top states for growth. In South Carolina, South Carolina is the fastest growing state in the United States, adding roughly 80,000 people between July 2024 and last year. So the numbers, Mike, are soaring, but we got a lot of people coming in here too. And it gets back to what Dr. Song says. We need to get the word out that construction is a good career path.
You need both skilled and unskilled workers. Talk to me about the difference between those two. When you define those two terms, what do they mean?
So the skilled workers are the people that are doing the HVAC work, electrical, plumbing, carpentry, you name it. Those are the people that really are needed. Skilled folks also, in my opinion, are folks that are coming out of the community colleges that have gotten the training that they need, which is a really nice way to get people going there. Unskilled would be people that don't know much about a construction, but we need them if they got a good attitude, if they're willing to work, if they're dependable. We need anybody and everybody that can get into commercial construction. And I'm telling you, the next several years are just going to get better. And we need to get the word out, like Tony and Dr. Song are talking about, hey, this is a good place to go. And one thing we haven't said is, what is the result of everything that we're doing? Well, we're improving the quality of life in Charlotte and North Carolina immeasurably for highways, roads, water and sewer, public buildings, libraries, you name it.
And Mike, and I looked at some of the numbers. I mean, these are in many cases high paying jobs relative to other sorts of work. I mean, I just looked at the numbers for the Charlotte region. You know, the median pay in installation and maintenance, $61,000 a year, construction, $56,000 a year. And those are almost double what they are for working in the retail sector or in food service, you know, which a lot of people go into. And I mean, those are just medians. I mean, if you're a manager, something like that, you get promoted. I mean, you could make a bunch more. And also, you know, stability. And I know Dave talked about this, about, look, this is a great place to be because we know that there are going to be more people moving here. There's going to be a need for more construction. And so if you're looking for job stability and good pay, I mean, this could be a good career.
One challenge.
Tony, what you said, I think that's the pay we observe for graduate from, you know, bachelor degree. They have a starting salary of 65, but then all the way going to the median industry income for construction engineer or construction manager reaching over 100. So that did offer a lot of opportunity.
One of the challenges that your organization, Dave, has cited is, that ABC Carolinas has cited is rapid technological change. What are we talking about with regard to that?
A lot of our folks are interested in AI. They are taking a lot of courses that we're offering both here and nationally. Construction now is getting extremely challenging, and it's not just like the old days when I was in high school, vocational education, building birdhouses and all that. It's very sophisticated now, and Dr. Song can talk a lot about what it is his new excellent school are teaching. But
he says that the industry is undergoing a digital transformation. So what technologies are at play, Dr. Song, in changing the construction industry? How do you digitize a building?
Sure.
Good question.
I think when I, you know, using the term digital transformation, this is actually including all this, you know, familiar terms such as AI, robotics, remote sensing, cloud computing, and all this. And I think from education perspective, yes, we're preparing not only for students to, you know, operate project today, but also the future, prepare the new generation of workforce that geared toward technology, right? So we're gradually adding those into the curriculum. I can frankly tell you that based on the feedback from our industry partners, they are tapping into AI, how that is being implemented. We're trying to do applied research innovation as well.
And when we come back, I want to talk about AI and how that interfaces with the construction industry. Dr. Lingwang Song is the founding director of the Albert School of Construction at UNC Charlotte. He's here with Dave Simpson, president and CEO of Carolina's AGC, and Tony Macia from the Charlotte Ledger. Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the state of construction in Charlotte, the challenges and opportunities facing the industry, with Tony Macia, founder and executive editor of the Charlotte Ledger. Dave Simpson is president and CEO of Carolina's AGC, Associated General Contractors. And Dr. Lingwang Song is a founding director of the Albert School of Construction at UNC Charlotte. We were talking about the impact of technology and technological changes coming through the industry. It's coming through all industries. And I'm sure that's one of the things that the Albert School will be focusing on for people coming into your institution, for workers both now on the job and for those coming into the industry, whether it's through the Albert School or some other pathway. What will embracing this technology and using this technology mean for them, Dr. Song? What will they have to do to become one with this technology?
Well, I think, again, from education perspective, we're making sure those technology being embedded into our curriculum. That's for next, 2 to 3 years, developing this construction digital transformation curriculum. Then next one is putting the technology in action. We do have planned already implementing drone, training and other, data analytic and AI training. And then we will send the student to the industry to practice. So they help implementing those technology in the real world through the internship.
Artificial intelligence is just one aspect of technological change that's coming down the pike. But let's start there. Let's start with that, because a lot of people are worried about artificial intelligence and what it might mean and what it might do for the workforce, to the workforce, decimate the workforce, etc. Artificial intelligence will never pick up a hammer. It will never weld a joint. It will never happen.
Well, are you maybe sure about that?
I'm not sure about that. I'm just thinking about robots. But anyway, this clearly brings both challenges and opportunities to any industry. How do you see it unfolding, Dr. Song, in construction? What will the role be, do you think, for AI?
I think, again, we talked to our industry partner. They already started implementing AI from writing reports, prepare RFP, but mostly using AI as an assistant. So they can still have their ideas, but AI help to boost productivity, right? And from our perspective, we really want to make Charlotte ecosystem for construction technology, especially in application. So we start reaching out to technology company, including those startups, and also working, put our faculty and students in it and work along with companies so that we can pilot some of the new technologies, such as in AI and robotics.
And AI seems to be a threat on the front lines to white-collar workers. I just heard a report yesterday from somebody in the computer industry that in a year or two, you won't need coders because the computers will do it themselves. So that was an industry that was, if you wanted to be successful and have a long career, everybody said, go into computer coding. Not so much anymore. And you're, I think, envisioning AI being used a lot in the front office, in planning and management, project management, perhaps even in design. What is that going to mean long term for this industry? And when robots come into the picture, and they will, what will that mean for your long term prospects as a member of this industry? Dr. Song.
I think Tony and Dave, you can chime in, but from education perspective, it's AI will be here, will stay. And it will replace some of the job functions. We're already seeing AI with a several click that where they can generate the whole pre-construction package, although the quality may not be their accuracy and everything else. But what that says that is that some part of the repetitive work will be replaced by AI. And that means we have a higher expectation of common sense, judgments, or taste when they looking at what generated by AI, you know, working with AI. So in the near future, I think we're passing the message to the student that we're this AI not requiring, is actually not less, it's actually more about the problem solving and critical thinking skill. I hope this is the word the industry see, you know, looking at as well, so that we can work together to prepare the next generation of construction workforce.
Dave, in the early 80s, I did a TV segment on robots in factories, in industries, and I remember being absolutely amazed at the precision of these robots that you see now building cars. They don't look like humans. They just do precisely one job, but they do it precisely. Over the weekend, it was reported that a robot ran in a foot race in China and beat the humans. So we have robots that are ambulatory, that look humanoid in a way. And we know that I said we'll never have AI welding anything or hammering anything, but the robots will be doing it. So if you're one of the million people that the industry needs, how long are your job prospects? How soon? We've seen what happened on the automobile factory floors. We've seen what happens on factory floors across the country with robots. Is this a long-term career opportunity, or will we see bulldozers driving themselves, cranes operating themselves, et cetera?
I can't answer any of those questions, but what I can say, they're all very exciting. The AI prospects, I don't look at that as a negative thing. If you got a huge workforce shortage, anything you can do to help plug the workforce shortage is good. Not long ago, I was at a local construction school in Charlotte, and a robotic dog came out, and it scared the dickens out of my dog who was with me at the time. But I think that robots down the line, like drones right now, will be a nice, not panacea, but a nice problem solver. But we got a ways to go, Mike, on that. I think many years.
Well, yeah, but it is inevitable. So I guess I'm asking if you're a young student coming into the Albert School or some other educational situation, even if it's a community college, or you're going right out of high school into construction because you think, well, look at these. Tony just mentioned the salaries that are available. How long will they be available? Is this a lifetime opportunity, or is this I'll do it for 5, 6, 7 years, but then the robots are taking over. Tony.
Yeah, I would just say, I mean, if you're ranking industries on which ones are relatively safer from AI, I think that, you know, construction is probably toward the top. I mean, it's not to say we'll never have robots laying bricks and swinging hammers, but, and there are some applications that we've talked about, some of the planning, some of the architecture, some of the scheduling, maybe some of the training that, that AI can replace. But for right now, the larger threats, I think, are as far as it relates to AI and robots, are to other industries, not construction. I mean, we don't know exactly where all this AI stuff is going precisely, but I think the longer term outlook is better in construction than it is for some other industries.
So Tony, yeah, similar, we have this, go ahead.
Sorry, similar observation over here. We're telling students, for example, if you're imagining yourself sitting on a construction site with 6,000 people, those are mega projects, the complexity involved, and the shipping a module from overseas to United States, every day of delay can cause over $1 million damage. So if you put them all together, the construction business is really complex. There's some repetitive work may be automated in the near future, but the overall management of the capital projects can be very challenging. Still need even the best quality people to manage them.
I'm just curious about a robot building a building, and if it rains, they can keep working, or it snows, they can keep working. But is it going to be like the Wizard of Oz, where they're going to need somebody to oil them up? Oil can, like the Tin Man. Tony, we have on the one hand this shortage of workers. On the other hand, you report that we have right now a construction of, I think, apartment complexes in Charlotte is at a five-year low. Is that because of a lack of workers, a lack of demand, too many apartments already be in existence? What's the deal there?
I think the answer is yes to all of those. Charlotte built a lot of apartments in the last few years, and it's still working through some of that supply. Now, part of it is also that if you talk to developers, they'll say that the numbers don't work. They don't pencil, as they say. It's the lingo they like to use. And that the number, you know, it's expensive. And construction costs are part of that, but it's not the only part of that. But, you know, that's cyclical. I think that'll get worked through eventually. And don't worry, you'll see plenty of more apartments coming up in Charlotte and the surrounding counties.
What's the impact been of high interest rates? The president wants interest rates to be lower. He keeps harping on that. He's threatened to fire the Fed chair because he won't lower the interest rates. And, of course, interest rates make costs rise. So what's been the impact of that in the construction industry, Dave?
Definitely has a lot of pent-up demand. We're hoping that the Fed does reduce the rate. The interest rates right now are very high. We keep hearing that sooner or later it's going to happen. I think that you're seeing in public construction, like the DOTs in both states and the administration departments, I think you're seeing them moving ahead. But it will be nice when the banks are a little bit easier about unleashing some of the money. I will tell you, I was at a national AGC convention in Florida not long ago, and I asked that very same question to some big time contractors about that, and they said it really doesn't matter. I said, why? And they said, because the owners we're dealing with are dealing with cash. So I mean, there you have it.
So I think also part of it, Mike, is that, you know, a lot of people have this conception that we're going to get back to where interest rates were a few years ago and the, you know, 2.5% or what have you, and these really low mortgages. I don't know that that's really in the offing, but part of it is maybe just, you know, adjusting to the notion that the current interest rates that we have might be here for a while.
So a new construction evidently in Charlotte, you report, is at a five-year low. And that is not just apartments. It's office buildings and retail space and restaurant space, et cetera. We had have a lot, I think, of vacant office space uptown following the pandemic and the fact that people are working from home. That resulted in serious conversations. I think you've been on this program to talk about the possibility of converting some of these office towers into livable spaces or even taking them down and replacing them. Consumer habits have also changed since the pandemic. So my question is, do we need office towers? Do we need shopping centers? People are shopping online. Do we need sit-down restaurants when everybody goes to a restaurant and gets takeout?
I mean, some of the restaurants I've been in are pretty packed. I mean, I do think, and people have been sort of predicting the demise of a lot of these things for years, and it really hasn't happened. I mean, I think if you talk to people, in the industry and in hospitality and in, office, that they will say, listen, there's something about people being together and people, whether it's in an office setting where they can be more creative and collaborative, or at a restaurant with friends and out seen, seen and being seen, that this is sort of a human instinct that isn't going to go away. Although, to your point, there are a lot of people ordering takeout. I mean, I think the office market is coming back a little bit. You've seen a lot of new announcements of companies moving here, a lot of them in financial services. Yes, some are being converted into residential or hotels. It's still a problem, I think, particularly for uptown, but not uniquely uptown. But I don't see that going away anytime soon.
Dave, if you're one of the workers who was employed building single family homes, or you moved into the construction industry for these office towers, et cetera, you're saying that now there are opportunities presenting themselves across the board on the construction of data centers and the infrastructure that supports those and other buildings, like water and wastewater and energy and institutional work and things like that. If you were a worker that did those things, built houses, built apartment buildings, built office towers, are you equipped to go into these infrastructure type construction projects?
Good question. First of all, our folks don't do single family residential. What Tony said about the multifamily construction, that has been so prevalent in recent years that you are seeing a little bit of a decline there. Another interesting question to elaborate on what you asked too is not for construction out in the field, but remote work and how all that factors in. I think that the infrastructure needs are so vast that we're going to just need more people coming in to help do that. I don't know if that specifically answers your question. If it doesn't, can you refine your question just a little bit?
It's okay. I'm short on time, so we'll move on, because there's an email from one of our listeners, Brian, who wants to know this. One issue that is rampant in the construction industry as a whole is misclassification of workers as independent contractors when they are legally employees. That results in workers not being paid overtime and working without significant legal protections. It also shifts the payroll tax burden from the employer to the worker and encourages unlawful behavior like paying under the table. How do we ensure actors in construction follow the law while simultaneously encouraging folks to enter that sector as workers? Dave, I guess that might go to you.
Okay, the News and Observer in here in Raleigh years ago did a story about that, and I said at the time, and I stick to it. If you are playing by the rules and basically having people full time, and not anything else, then you're doing everything right, and you're providing what needs to be provided, and your bids are going to be a little bit higher. But it's incumbent upon our industry, particularly with the workforce shortage, to make sure that we're doing people right. And if people are not being paid what they need to be paid, they're not going to hang around. And I would also point out, elaborating on what Tony said before, the increase in pay for people in the construction industry is going up higher for construction than many other sectors. But if people aren't treating people and paying people right, it's hard enough to keep them there when you're paying them right.
I have 30 seconds left, so this may be an unfair question, but we've had all these tariffs coming and going, on again, off again. It's raised costs. It's also raised uncertainty, which is the bigger problem, Dr. Song, if, as a planner, being able to figure out whether I can build that project because I don't know what it's going to cost, or the fact that the costs have risen.
Correct. I think that's why we're introducing supply chain topics in our degree plan, because the student need to understand more about the supply chain and uncertainty involved and do a better job in terms of risk management.
Tough. That's where AI comes in. Perhaps AI will solve all of these problems for us.
We hope.
Dr.
Still need our
Ling
guidance.
Feng, Dr. Linglung Song, founding director of the Albert School of Construction at UNC Charlotte, Dave Simpson, president and CEO of Carolina's Associated General Contractors, and Tony Mesilla, founder and executive editor of the Charlotte Ledger. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.